Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com, and in this, November 1st edition of the podcast, apologies to people for doing it a little late, I am Justin Robert Young. Joining me live in studio is Andrew Main.
Hey, Justin, thanks for letting me into the studio.
Well, I mean, you own it, so like you could literally come in whenever you want it.
I think by now you and the rats have squatter's rights here.
Yeah, well, probably. We're going to be going over Kevin James playing the White House, Method Man learning magic, and why television is in love with magicians solving crimes. But before we get into all of that, I want to remind you that at Trick Shop Magic, folks, you can go ahead there and buy the Dracula Book Test 2.0. It is maybe the best book test ever created. They tried in a lab, and this was the best thing that they could possibly come up with. Science has perfected the book test, my friends, and it is called the Dracula Book Test 2.0, and you can get it right there at trickshopmagic.com. Just do me a favor, personally. Go over there, and when you buy it, in the comment box, when you're picking some stuff out, say, iTrick sent me. And just let Sam Blankenship go there. Know who spurred you on to buy the Dracula Book Test 2.0, available only, well, at least, you know, where we want you to buy it, at trickshopmagic.com, bringing you the brick-and-mortar experience to the internet one click at a time. All right, Andrew, Kevin James, the world-famous magician, had a really interesting gig this Friday, the Halloween Friday. He played the White House for the Obama family. Now, can you imagine a more prestigious gig for somebody like Kevin James, considering the kind of act that he does?
Well, I was going to say right now, the rumor is that this is actually Kevin James sticking his toe in the water for a potential presidential run.
I'll tell you what, there is a wide open field.
He's got my vote. I think Kevin James would be awesome for that.
I know. Finally, those Kevin James values that we've all been waiting for as a lost country.
I gotta say, I can't think of anything more prestigious. Now, I know that some people say, oh, maybe playing for the Queen. Perhaps. But our president was elected in a democracy.
The
leader of the free world, perhaps, in my opinion, maybe a little more prestigious. That's pretty incredible. And I've heard of magicians performing at the White House Easter egg roll. They also have performers who will do like the tribute to the president at the Ford Theater.
Yeah.
I know Copperfield did. Randy, who we performed, or we did a performance seance this weekend with, has actually performed at the White House.
Okay, and, oh, really?
Yeah.
Who did he perform for?
I think it was the Kennedy White House, actually.
Oh, wow.
And he's got some funny stories about that, too, about his, he had, back in the day, he had a radio receiver or some device that, you know, back then nobody had that was just driving the Secret Service nuts.
Oh, really?
And he had to have, like, I don't know, he had a tooth problem or something, and they escorted him downstairs and through some corridors, and he ended up in some sort of dental office or something that was in some building across the street or something.
Oh,
it was
really?
A crazy, crazy story. It was the exit that, like, when I think it was Gerald Ford's daughter was married to the White House, she was able to evade the press because
there's all the secret corridors. I saw a documentary with Nicolas Cage about that not too long ago.
I had a friend that used to be a cameraman in the D.C. area, and he told me about a map they had in the NBC office in Washington, D.C. that showed an infrared map, all of the tunnels underground radiating from the White House.
Really?
Including one to the Air Force Base nearby. I mean, just, or to the nearest airfield. I mean, just amazing. So whenever they've done reconstruction projects, they take years and they just keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper down. So
yeah.
But as far as, I think that's fantastic. I think Kevin James is a great performer. He's a perfect guy to come perform at Halloween. And my hat's off to Kevin James for doing that. I think that's great. I couldn't think of a person who'd be better suited to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, with his kind of act, it's just, I think it's just awesome. It's just awesome he got that opportunity.
Yeah. Nice guy, too.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's always been really, really cool to us.
But you heard it here first. This is his bid, and his you know, putting his at the race. He's going to run.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. And an independent ticket.
He's going to walk up to the ballot box with a severed hand holding on to it. He's holding on to his voting ticket. You know, he's going to walk in there like that. You know, he's going to walk out of there and do snowstorm. It'll be awesome.
I know. I know. You think, yeah, he's doing routine. He's just eyeing Obama, sizing him up, just right. Thinking, you know, like, hey, I look at a really nice chair. Wouldn't mind sitting there in a couple years.
Well, I could see, like, you know, when he goes to address the UN, he's going to pull out the case, the little trunk, and out's going to walk the little Charlie Chaplin. People are going to be like, aww.
So doesn't matter if we haven't paid our dues in 10 years.
Vice President Rudy Kobe. That hair, trust
Come
me.
Come on. James Kobe? That's a ticket you can believe in, folks. Speaking of magicians who aren't as well known for their craft, Method Man. We had a clip on iTricks.com with Mr. Meph doing a little floating card routine backstage at a concert with Redman. I believe, if I actually remember correctly, it was a Cypress Hill concert, or at least a big show that they organized. I'll give you one guess as to the theme of the evening. But my question to you, Andrew, can you remember a more oddball celebrity, or at least a celebrity that you wouldn't think would be into magic, seeking out camera time to apply their craft there?
Well, I think one of the most famous sort of lovers of magic is Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
And I have had friends, a family, who've seen Muhammad Ali perform. Aunt and uncle live in Hillhead Island, and they would see Muhammad Ali, you know, around. He'd be showing magic tricks, and I think he would reveal it because, being a Muslim, he thought it was inappropriate not to tell
Yes, I think, yeah, somebody told me that, because I'd always heard that story as he just told everybody the tricks because he couldn't help but tell everybody, like, hey, look what I did. But I guess, yeah, it was a religious thing.
I've heard that, which I think somebody needs to tell Muhammad that it's okay. Magic actually supersedes religion, and it's okay to keep our secrets.
Exactly.
It's true fact. I think
look it up. Look it up. It's on Wikipedia.
I think Allah meant to say that. And if you have any angry letters, send them to Justin.
Yes, show at iTricks.com,
because he told me this. But it's neat. Celebrities love magic. I knew a girl in high school who I showed a card trick. She goes, oh, that's cool. She says, I saw a really cool one. She says, yeah, Tom Selleck showed this to me on the airplane flying over to Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she and her family, they were jet set. And so it wasn't like she was lying. I mean, it's totally true. And I mean, I believe she's a student. So she told me, oh, you showed me this cool card trick. I'm like, that's cool. Tom Selleck showing this 14-year-old girl a card trick.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah, Tom. Here
yeah.
we go.
Tom, yeah. I'm like, great. How do I compete with that? Thanks, Mr. Selleck.
Thanks, Selleck.
Well, I can do magic. Oh, yeah. You know, the last magic trick I saw was done by Magnum P.I.
I mean, to me, the ultimate, though. The ultimate, and especially this is sort of aided by the way history took its turns, but OJ. OJ has to be his routine, and we've had it on iTricks before. Maybe we'll repost it with this.
The Circus of Stars.
Yeah, the Circus of the Stars.
I don't quite count that, though, because it's not somebody. The Circus of Stars, they literally say, who wants to be on there? They go teach them something. They go do it, and it's not really people who really actively do magic. I mean,
True.
So, I mean, because you get, you know, it's not, you know, it's what, do you think that Laverne from Laverne and Shirley actually is a tightrope walker? No.
No.
I mean, it's amusing and horrifying to watch OJ in that. But, I mean, people who are genuinely interested in magic, I mean, it just fascinates me when you find out about that.
You know, we've had kind of a running theme on some of the
David Allan Coe.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
David Allan Coe, actually, country singer, actually has a magic show, David Allan Coe Magic Show, and it's a magic. And it's just,
really?
Let's just say that he's famous for being a musician. But it's weird. It's the David Allan Coe doing magic.
Yeah. We've had kind of a running thing going on the podcast for the last couple weeks about why boxers seem to have an interest in magic.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned Muhammad Ali. Well, what's your theory? We've had a couple of people weigh in. Our friend Michael Locke said that, you know, he had his own theory about why, you know,
like Klitschko and...
Yeah, Klitschko, mm-hmm. And I believe Roy Jones Jr. just had a whole thing where he's seen Lance Burton 7 times, but, like, didn't want to go back, you know, stage to meet him because he felt nervous, and this is a guy who... you know, fights in multi-million dollar, maybe the best pound-for-pound fighter there is right now, so.
I'm gonna give you a couple theories.
Okay.
There is a...
And by the way, this is just something that, if you want, next time that you meet Andrew Main, just in anywhere that you might run into him. Think of anything and ask him his theory on something, because he will come up with one. This is a foolproof plan. So please, your theory with the 3-second lead time that I've given
you. Yeah, I mean, again, because it would be very ridiculous. There is, of course, a strong Vegas connection between boxing and magic.
Yes.
And boxers hang out in Vegas a lot.
Yeah.
And so either to go box or more likely to go see other boxers box, and you're going to see magic. So there's going to be that. It's like the Lance Burton story. You go to Lance, you go to Vegas, you know, who are some of the big personalities there. That's one possibility.
There we go.
I think that boxing is, if you're a boxer, and some celebrities, boxing in particular, they're the athletes who, if you're an average boxer, even a famous one, your chances to see them are much less often than your average player of any other sport, like baseball or basketball or football. Your football, you do a whole season, you're playing games every week.
Yeah.
You're a boxer, you have, what, maybe 3 or 4 big rounds a year? I mean, and that's...
I mean, maybe, you know, for big-ticket fighters, yeah. Maybe 2 a year.
Yeah.
Like 2 years, a big year for you.
So if you're at a party or at a place or whatever, and you want to be a part and you want to be sociable and you want to, hey, what do? You can talk about what you're doing. But when you're not actively, you know, have a fight next week or the next month or something like that, magic's a neat thing. Say, oh, hey, check out this thing. I mean, that would kind of appeal to me as something of a hook kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because as, you know, if you're a singer, it's, we got a concert, come see there, whatever. But if you want to share something, you want to share something to people, not necessarily what you do, that's that. I think there's also an interest in magic, sleight of hand, precision. I think that part of when they do in sports training is they want to train boxers to the finer motor skills are actually very, very helpful.
They're
very, very useful because, you know, boxing, although it appears to be this very big, broad sort of thing, one, precision helps. And two, if you want to have longevity in the ring and you want to try to, you know, avoid the effects of just concussion after concussion, being able to have some sort of very fine-tuned skill can be very, very useful. There's evidence that indicates that. Being able to do that, play musical instruments or whatever are good things to have, because also it's a good sign of when maybe things are a little off. Third reason might be because of the fact that, you know, the most famous boxer of all time had magic as a hobby. You have a lot of people that want to emulate people like that. There's a whole generation of boxers that idolize Muhammad Ali, and when you talk to him and people around him, the fact that he was into magic, it makes it something interesting. There are stories about Arnold Schwarzenegger and hobbies or things that Arnold did other people wanted to emulate.
Yeah.
To the point that Arnold, you know, when he first got started and was such a huge success in the bodybuilding world, he would actually play upon this and just invent stuff that he did.
You know, so other people would tend to get into it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he'd get a young bodybuilder to go ask him for advice, and Arnold tell him, well, you know, the new thing is, you know, you got to scream every time you do a pose. You know?
Yeah.
And so you get some guy go up on stage, you go, ah!
So funny.
So there you go. 3 theories, Justin. Give
I
me
know.
Time.
I'll I know. I said 1, and he came back with 3. That's why Andrew over, you know, under promises is over delivers.
Right.
Tommy Wynn in Las Vegas. We announced the 19-year-old has his own show coming up at the Palazzo. We found out this week from the man himself that it was going to get bounced back to 2010 because of a fire hazard restriction with the stage they were bringing in. This marks, from our unofficial count, 2 shows, Wynn and Antonio Casanova, who had shows that were unannounced, at least to us, that we even did interviews with in preparation. Tickets were sold. Actually, no, I don't know if Wynn sold tickets. Antonio definitely sold tickets for his show. And lo and behold, past their debut dates, they are not performing. What is the danger? And, you know, let's even take it in the context of now, with the economy as shaky as it is. The danger that even at the point that these guys were at, where they're doing press and they're trying to drum up attention, that these things still just might not happen.
Well, first, you got to respect these guys for stepping up, for really trying to step up and go, because Vegas is the biggest stage in the world. It's the biggest place in the world. And I don't care, even if it's in a small theater in Vegas, it's still a big deal to be able to go there and play there. So you got to give them just due credit for that. I ran into Antonio a couple months back in Vegas when he just popped into a magic shop.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, then, you know, he was hopeful that, you know, the date was going to be opening at. And it's, you, like I said, there's the economy is one thing in general. I mean, the economy, it makes everything difficult. But Vegas is a hard, hard town. We know guys, we know people there who have their names on billboards and all that, who it is a daily battle to put butts into seats.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, it's not just a matter of, you don't go to Vegas and just have to have a show. You got to have a team of people working for you that are putting butts into seats, because there is 1,001 distractions out there for everybody's attention. Vegas is going through some hard times right now. So it's just not a matter of getting a stage. It's not just a matter of getting a billboard. You've got to have people actively trying to get into different tour groups, all the, you know, the timeshares, the stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to be, you know, leafleting the place. You've got to do a lot of work to get people in there. And when you start talking to people who've been there for years and you find out the things that they have to do and still have to do on a day-to-day basis, getting a showroom, just it's just not that. There's a lot more to it. So, you know, for these shows have to get pushed back, you know, it's not surprising because it's a challenge. It's absolutely a challenge. And it says nothing about them or lack of their interest. I mean, there are big name shows that close all the time because it's a big battle to try and do that. So if you got to be a little more conservative about that. And as far as, you know, the danger in announcing it and then pushing it back, well, the problem is if things work right and you haven't done it enough to tell people what's coming, that can be just as bad.
Yeah.
So that's a risk you take. I'm the kind of person, I always play everything close to the vest. I never tell people what I'm up to until, like, I'm pretty darn sure it's going to happen. But I lose out on advance hype, advanced publicity, and just getting a buildup for that. So I think it's sort of, you've got to figure out the model you want to do. And in a case like this, these guys are both, performers who are either kind of new to Vegas. And it's a pretty big deal to be able to get out there and say that. I can understand. I can absolutely understand why they would want to get out there and get ahead of it. And it certainly is a risk as far as a reputational risk to not open when you say you're going to. But Believe, you know, Believe took forever. EFX took forever. And it's not uncommon.
You know, and Vegas also seems like one of those towns where a lot is decided by a few people, you know. And ultimately, there are a few people with their hands on the buttons that can kind of change momentum and, you know, make things go from, hey, it's happening to, hey, it's not. So it's not like, you know, it's any kind of democracy. It's somebody who's running the casino as you're in, and then if something happens, then they could say you're out. It's just that simple.
And it comes down to dollars, which is what the way it should be. I mean, it's a business. It absolutely is a business on that. And I think that for a lot of people, and I don't know at all what they're planning or what their strategy was, so I can't speak to that at all. But generally speaking, it's a business plan. It's not just – it's other parts of the world. You rent out a theater. You buy some commercial time.
Yeah.
You hand out flyers. You maybe do some phone room sales, whatever. You fill it up. Vegas, it's a lot more complicated than that. You're doing a lot more shows than that. And I think for some people, they come into it kind of thinking that's the way it works there. And it's not. It's literally not. It is a lot more involved there. So sometimes what happens is people go in there, they're like, well, we can put you in there like this. And then the people who do the booking on that see, you know, the advanced ticket sales aren't there. We know people who, you know, very, very famous magicians who have had bookings there, that people who've been on network TV and advanced ticket sales have been in like in the single digits.
Yeah.
Which,
oh, it is ugly, folks. Yeah. I mean, like, let me just say this, that when you peek behind the curtain of, you know, all the big posters and all of the hype and all the gigantic pull quotes about how awesome someone is, and also just beyond the fact that, like, listen, this is a very small industry. Everybody hears about everything, and getting to Vegas is a big deal, especially, let's even say, for a guy like Tommy Winters, as young as he is, a 19-year-old kid. For him to get out to Vegas and perform in a headlining show, that's a big deal that
Absolutely.
Everybody hears about it. But I'll tell you what, man, when you peek inside that sausage factory and see, you know, it is brutal. It is brutal.
I'm not going to rule either of those guys out.
No. No, certainly.
They both seem pretty determined, so we'll see.
All right, Andrew. We have, we're a little busy. There's a reason why this is late here, folks. So I'll tell you that. And part of it is because on Saturday night, Halloween.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the quilts we've been making for Etsy.
Of course. Hey, listen, folks. Any revenue stream in a down economy. Houdini, seance, baby. It worked. I think so, right?
Absolutely. We did a seance on Saturday night, Halloween, to summon the spirit of Harry Houdini at the James Randi Educational Foundation, the epicenter for skepticism in the entire world, the home of the century's most prominent skeptic, as named by, like, all the major skeptic organizations.
Yes. Everybody.
One of Esquire's 100 best people in the world, James Randi, right in the heart of the skepticism, we brought our ray of belief and possibility and summoned the spirit of Houdini. And by our count, we had 10 successful
hits. 10
hits.
Ten hits, everybody.
10 incontrovertible pieces of evidence, proof that Houdini contacted us.
Indeed. And as I said on the broadcast, the spread was 5.5, so we covered.
Yep.
You know, it was...
we were using a very rigorous pseudoscientific method of counting this.
Indeed.
And somebody who was, you know, fully informed on, let's say, science or reason, logical thinking.
Yeah, whatever.
Might disagree with us, but I think from our point of view, we did. And it was
reasonable
great.
Reasonable minds can disagree, but I would suggest no matter who you are, you go ahead and watch the replay of it. It is on weirdthings.com right now.
It was a lot of fun. We had Brian Brushwood was coordinating the event and switching between us. We had a seance in Denver, Colorado that we connected with. We had people watching live from around the world. We had over 10,000 people who watched this. And we had Randi participating, which was great. Randi helped us out a lot. We got David Copperfield, Penn and Teller, Barry and Stewart, Michael Shermer, David Knott.
I think that's it. And Phil Plait.
We got all these people. We got the top magicians in the world, some of the top skeptics and critical thinkers to send us words that were sealed inside of envelopes that were then placed inside of a chest.
Yes.
And we'd pull out an envelope, and then we'd use either a Ouija board or I hypnotize Justin.
Yep, I could get hypnotized.
We tried to use different methods of divining to find out what those words were. And I think when you watch it, your spine will tingle.
It is a spine-tingling event, even while you're watching it.
We wore tuxedos. We wore tuxedos and tails.
Exactly. I got into a straitjacket. I'll tell you what. I'm not even joking around here, folks. It was a hilarious time. And we got, you know, like we said, man, weird never sleeps, and neither do we. This Saturday, we are doing another live stream,
As we're packing up for the Houdini seance, I'm explaining my plans for our sea monster expedition and our alien contact thing, which we'll get into.
Yep.
And then by Monday, I'm like, hey, it's Carl Sagan Day Saturday. Why don't we go live stream that?
And lo and behold, we will be there on Saturday. We're going to be streaming the entire event. We're going to have talks from Phil Plait, James Randi.
Head of astrobiology at NASA. So what you need to do is follow weirdthings.com, go to the website or get our Twitter feed and check that out.
Twitter feed is weirdthings.com.
Yep. So check that out and you'll be able to find out. So all day long, it'll be an event celebrating the life of Carl Sagan, who, although not a magician, did love magic.
There we go. Please check it out, weirdthings.com. And also... I'll tell you what, let's say that someone is right now, they're maybe on public transportation or they're walking the streets or they're commuting to their office and they're listening to me and you talk on a podcast,
and
right?
Like, man, what happened?
Yes, I mean, they would say, and I think we could agree, this could use Brian Brushwood.
Yeah,
right?
What would happen if we had Justin Robert Young, Andrew Mayne, and Brian Brushwood all together? Those three pseudo-geniuses.
well, dare to dream, folks, because this is a reality. The Weird Things podcast we launched, I guess it was a week and a half ago?
A week and a half ago.
We have a new episode up now. We'll have another one up next week, most likely. Please subscribe to it on iTunes. It is really, really fun.
What it is, it's Justin, Brian, and myself, and we explore weird things, paranormal, fringe, just odd stuff. And very often what I do is I pose scenarios to Justin and Brian. You know,
yes.
What would you do if you did have the power of invisibility? You know, or we go over stories like the first account of a vampire, the United States' first actual account of a vampire. The newspaper said this guy was a vampire.
James Brown.
Yep, that was his name. Actually got a presidential pardon and sent to an asylum. It's a crazy story. We talk about these things. We talk about, you know, from a point of view of magicians and sideshow performers and guys who love science and comic books. We try to approach this from a very...
It's a very in-the-moment kind of perspective. It really... What comes through is our passion for these, these elements and these situations. And, you know, it's not a moralizing time by any means.
And we don't just talk about the stuff. We go out and do something about it. Thus, the Houdini seance. Thus, some of the other events we have coming up. So it's not just a bunch of guys sitting in armchairs going, well, I think this. We go out there, we do. We talk about a sea monster. Then we go out and we try and track down a sea monster.
Yeah, absolutely. So please go ahead and the podcast up at weirdthings.com or
iTunes Store. iTunes. Do a search for Weird Things. It's totally free.
Boom. So free, baby. And, you know, the big thing is In Half.
Oh, right. In Half.
We have In Half coming out. What can you tell us about In Half?
Justin, I'm glad you asked me about In Half. In Half is my brand new DVD. It's an illusion.
Yeah.
It is an upright visual sawing in half.
Okay.
Imagine this. You have on stage some cardboard boxes, literally cardboard boxes. And this illusion will cost you, well, I'll get it in a second, okay? You open up the cardboard boxes, you show they're empty, you stack one on top of the other and a bit taller than you, okay? You go in through a door behind in the boxes, the front doors open up and you can see your body standing in there.
Yeah.
You reach over to the box below you and you slide the top box off to an adjacent box, splitting yourself in half while the doors are wide open. Body, torso, one box, legs in the other box, okay?
Yeah.
Now, there you are. Your body's in half over here. Your legs are over there. Pretty amazing, right?
Yep.
Pretty amazing, right?
I didn't think so, yeah.
Then you grab the top of the box or you push down and you lift your torso up off the ground of the box.
Full separation.
Full separation. The audience can see several inches below, around, underneath you, clear to the back of the box.
Yes.
It looks awesome. I'm, of course, biased, but everybody who sees this says,
I am not biased at all when I say that this is the greatest illusion you will ever see or perform.
As soon as the trailer hit, I started getting SMSs. My iPhone was blowing up from friends like, this is really awesome. Really, really cool. And obviously, I'm very proud of this thing, but it's neat. Now, here's the cool thing. It's an illusion you can build in under 30 minutes.
Wait, hold on. It's got to cost about $7,000.
Well, Justin, normally it would, but I figured out how to build this illusion for under $60. It uses $60 worth of material.
$60!
You can build it in under half an hour, all right?
Wow.
And it looks fantastic. So check out the, I mean, you're just hearing me tell you, oh, it looks great. Just look at the video. Look at the video. It's a $60 illusion. Okay, the DVD is only $25, okay?
Yep.
So for under $100, you have a stage illusion that looks, in my opinion, like one of the finest sawing in half illusions period.
Super visual, and you know, it is. I love it. I think it's fantastic.
We have another variation called Half Man, and I've uploaded a video for that where Mr. Justin Robert Young plays a prominent part in that. And you can check that out. So if you like illusions, you want to get into illusions, check out In Half. It will be available everywhere next week.
Yes. Yes, but you can pre-order it now.
Well, it'll be available from us next week. It'll be available everywhere in 2 weeks. It'll be in shops in 2 weeks. It'll be available from us. You can pre-order from us now, and we'll be shipping next week. So if you want it now, order from us.
Just going to say, you know, I know where they're being made.
And, yeah.
You know, you'll get them first.
They get shipped here. Yeah, I mean, we got to ship them from here to the distributor, and it's got to go to the shop, so... Get them from here.
I could be shipping it to you.
Get them 2 weeks early to buy from us.
There we go. All right, folks. In Half, shockedmagic.com. And go to andrewmanian.com if you want to see the Half Man video or go to your YouTube, which has just been bustling lately for you.
Yeah.
You have all sorts of videos going up there all the time. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to his YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah, my YouTube. Thanks for mentioning that. Thank you very much for the congratulations.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, the iPhone trick demo video, right?
My iPhone trick demo for my iPhoneTrick.com website just passed 1 million views.
A mil, baby.
1 million views, Justin.
A million views.
So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Congratulations on that.
Justin is responsible for 999,000 of those.
Yes, absolutely. All right, Andrew, as we mentioned at the top of the program, NBC picked up a new show for next season about a...
They picked up a show or a pilot?
A pilot. Picked up a pilot, sorry. About a magician who was called in by a special law enforcement task force to solve crimes. Now, combined with, of course, CBS's hit show, The Mentalist, and the new ABC project with Penn and Teller, which to this point they've ordered... scripts for.
Mm-hmm.
We now have three high-profile projects in the works for network television about magicians, career magicians, solving crimes. What is the fascination with this concept?
Well, first, I want to make a point to illustrate a point that I've been saying on these very microphones for the last 3 years that we've been running Nitrix and broadcasting.
Okay.
There is a belief that magic on television runs in cycles.
Yes.
I disagree. Now, I know that people in the industry, even in the TV industry, sometimes believe in the idea of cycles, but what those cycles are and how they behave, nobody can describe. You know, it becomes a thing everybody believes in, but if you ask for proof of it, it's harder for people to say. And you get all of a sudden everybody wants to do one thing and people get burned out. There was, you know, in the early 90s, you know, a bunch of Western movies came out.
Yeah.
And people got burned out on Westerns for a while. And then all of a sudden you had, like, you know, Unforgiven came out.
Yeah.
But in a time when everybody said it wouldn't happen, pirate movies aren't going to happen. Then
Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah.
So people believe in cycles, but the ones that defy the cycle are often the ones that do the biggest impact. Magic, you know, we hear it after Copperfield, oh, magic's gone. Then we had the world's greatest magic, and then, oh, magic's not going to be anymore. And then David Blaine comes along while in the middle of a cycle, ignoring the fact it's supposed to be in a cycle. David Blaine comes along, okay? David Blaine, you know, starts doing his specials a little bit less often, but then people are like, oh, you know, magic's not going to be big anymore. And then Criss Angel comes along, defying the idea that there is the cycle.
Yes.
Criss Angel's show is still on 3 years later, four years later. How many seasons it is now?
Okay. It was season five.
Yeah, they have sort of like their accelerated season, right? But anyhow,
yeah.
The show is still on, and in the midst of this, we now get, you know, we have The Mentalist comes on, a character who is based upon, you know, a magical, you know, genre. And when did the cycle start and end? I don't know. It's been continuous. It's been continuous since the 90s, okay? I mean, it's like 1999 was when David Blaine's, I think, his second special aired, okay?
Yeah.
1997 was his first one, Street Magic. So we're 12 years in. We're 12 years in where
some kind of magic has had a television presence.
You're never more than 12 months away or 18 months away from the next big thing. So if there is a cycle, it's a very short cycle. So yeah, this sort of illustrates that. I think the fascination now with doing fictional stories about magicians is we get magicians. We understand magicians are guys that have some sort of technical inside knowledge, and it's pretty cool. A big thing in TV right now is the procedural. A procedural is a show like CSI where you have something that happens and people go about to try and figure out what happens, and they use a procedure, and the drama is built around that.
Yes, yeah. And it's a show that you can watch one episode in the middle of a season and not always be completely lost.
But what makes a procedural work from a TV point of view is you got to have a gimmick. What makes your procedural special? Now, CSI, what was great about CSI is they said, okay, instead of a bunch of detectives, it's going to be the people who look at the evidence who are going to solve it.
Yeah.
Now, it became such a popular show, they can go do CSI Miami and these other shows where they're detectives.
Yes.
They use the premise of it being CSI, but they're really just a detective show, which is fine.
Yeah.
The initial show sold because you're watching the guys in the lab, and they made that interesting, so that worked from that point of view. The Closer. The Closer was a show that's based upon, you know, what about the person that has to get you to admit?
To confess
to doing that. Lie to me. Same thing. You know, like, what's a different gimmick? So now you have Psych was another show that sort of used, you know, the idea of somebody who...
Yeah, a guy who has a photographic memory who lies and says that he's a psychic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So with the Mentalist and now with the new interest, and it comes in like, okay, magicians could be a great subject for procedurals because they have this technical knowledge. In the science journals, psychology journals, there's a lot of research, a lot of studies coming out talking about magic technique because we as magicians have been using things as we've been exploiting things that we know about how the brain works that's sort of new to science. You know, science hasn't realized how much knowledge, folk knowledge we have about how to exploit this stuff. There are things that we may have been aware of in science. We didn't have names for them. We didn't have terms for them, what have you. But now that's becoming a very interesting area. So this is why this is blown up.
That, and there's also the whole TV thing that everybody wants what's working.
Well, right? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, because procedures work and because The Mentalist is big. It's absolutely because The Mentalist.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's hope they all get on there.
The good ones. Yeah, you want the good ones to get on there. The bad ones get on there, then everybody starts going, oh, it's run its course and all that, which is always amazing to me. You know, a bad show means it's run its course. No, it just means it's a bad show.
Yeah, just means somebody didn't do their job or got screwed
up. It's like they're talking about, like, oh, Star Trek's run its course. They need to retire for 10 years. And then a guy named J.J. Abrams is like, I don't know. I think there's some life in it.
Yeah, how about me and my buddies write a really awesome movie and then I direct it with cool actors? Yeah.
You don't retire things, you retire people.
Yeah.
That's my attitude.
Well, this podcast is retired because we've come to the end of it. But you know, Andrew Main. He's the reason why this podcast is here, and gosh darn it, he just steps in and kills.
I think that actually is a guy named Tim Berners-Lee or maybe Marconi, but...
Oh, okay, okay. Well, all right. Big shot. Where can people find more of you?
I am at andrewmain.com.
Yeah.
Follow me on Twitter at Andrew Main.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Facebook. I've got a ton of Facebook friends. Why not you? And shockmagic.com.
Yeah. Oh, you looked at me when you said, why not you? But I am your Facebook friend.
I know you are. What am I supposed to look at? The iMac? The beautiful, wonderful iMac in front of me with this very inviting screen as I crush the aluminum alloy.
And
screen.
Also, let me just point out that Andrew Main writes almost every day lately on weirdthings.com, at least a couple times a week, if not much, much more. Please check out his writing there because it is fantastic, my friends. Fantastic. And that about wraps it up for this episode of the podcast. I am Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com. That is at Justin R. Young on Twitter.
Plug,
bang
plug,
a gong.
Plug.
iTricks.com.